if you're talking about changing someone's job and their responsibilities, there's automatically going to be a certain level of resistance if they're not part of the conversation. So pull them into the conversation, even when you're at the conceptual level.
Welcome to Manufacturing Happy Hour, the podcast where we get real about the latest trends and technologies impacting modern manufacturers.
Manufacturing
Happy Hour. Each week, we interview industry experts that are at the top of their craft and give you the tools, tactics, and strategies you need to take your career and your business to the next level. And now, your host, Chris Lukey.
Hey folks, it's episode 177. Today we're discussing strengthening your engineering team through co-ops and employee ownership. Our guest this week is Marquise Warren, Vice President of Manufacturing at Century Equipment, a company focused on sampling equipment and solutions based in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Now this episode is a real full circle moment and also a walk down memory lane because Marquise was a mechanical engineering classmate of mine back at Marquette University in the mid-2000s. So we were going through all the same classes at the same time, learning the ropes. So yeah, we got to know one another for the first time almost 20 years ago. And yes, I'm pretty sure this is the first time an old college classmate of mine has made an appearance on the show. Anyway, there will be plenty of reminiscing later on in the episode. But first, let me tell you a bit more about Marquise. Marquise has been on an absolute tear as an up-and-coming manufacturing leader in Milwaukee. He's already been recognized by the Milwaukee Business Journal and the Waukesha County Business Alliance for his work bringing manufacturing 4.0 technologies and process improvements into Century's repertoire. And as we hear more about this firsthand today, here are three more things you can expect from this episode. First, you're going to hear about the power of co-op programs in engineering education. These are the programs where you alternate a semester in the classroom with a semester working an engineering job, basically like an internship, but it's not just limited to the summer, and you end up with over a year of real-world work experience by the time you graduate. Without giving too much away, Marquise started at Century as an engineering co-op in college. I'll say this, if you're listening to this and you're someone that's at a company that wants to start a co-op or internship program or enhance those programs that exist today, pay attention to this part of the conversation. Second, we discuss employee ownership, we discuss company culture, and then third, of course, we're going to share some college stories. Maybe we'll say something that makes you nostalgic for your college days or the start of your career. I don't know, but we're going to have some fun with this part of the episode. As always, if you want to learn more, go check out the show notes page at manufacturinghappyhour.com/177. And if you want to join a community of manufacturing leaders that are constantly collaborating, having conversations about these episodes or otherwise, well, hey, it would be great to have you in the Manufacturing Happy Hour industry community over on LinkedIn. Go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/community. It's a private group. Request to join. Shoot me a message, and I will let you right in. Again, that's the Manufacturing Happy Hour industry community. Anyway, with all that said, let's get into the interview. Now would be a good time to tell you that Marquise wasn't just a classmate, but we were actually on the same design team for a pretty formative engineering project of ours, which is exactly where today's story begins. All right, man, we're in business.
Awesome.
Cheers, Marquise. Welcome to Manufacturing Happy Hour.
Appreciate the invite.
Well, I was telling you before the interview, I get a number of emails asking to be on the show, which is awesome. I love having the opportunity to talk to a lot of great people in the manufacturing space. But sometimes if I'm on a trip or something, like, I just get backlogged and I miss some of them. But when I saw your name pop up, I'm like, oh man, like an old college classmate. And I mean, like, freshman year, first, second semester. Awesome to have you here, man.
It's great to reconnect again. It's been a while.
Yeah, I have to ask, how difficult was it working with me freshman year on our design project? I hope I'm not bringing back horror stories at that point.
It's funny. The first thing I remember when I look back on that project was the all-nighter right before we had to actually present.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like doing all the CAD work and really trying to work through and pull everything together. But as far as you being difficult, I would say not at all. It's like, given our team, we needed that person to really pull us all together and make sure that we got it done.
We had a really good team for that. And I do remember that all-nighter. I remember the computers crashing once or twice because I think the CAD files were just so darn big for that. Computers have come a long way since 2005, 2006.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what were we running, Unigraphics or some other offshoot 3D CAD program?
I think it was something like that. I definitely remember being up all night that night. I remember skateboarding through the hallway that night because I think Gus, one of our teammates, had brought his skateboard with him. And I also remember, so for context, we had to design a Mars rover. That's what it was like, and there was like an obstacle course for it that it had to complete.
Yeah, that's right. So it was the Mars rover, three tasks. We had to pick up pea gravel, cut a rock segment, and I can't even remember.
I was really hoping you'd remember the third one because I'm like, I remember picking something up. I remember having to cut like a rock segment for like, you know, bring back some stuff from Mars to showcase and study when it cut. And this was like probably a 20 by 20 foot course that had been set up outside of the engineering building. That was like the culmination of where the project took place. I also remember our team had a running joke because everyone was supposed to pick a team name, but we changed our team name every time we did that. I don't know if you remember that.
Every single presentation or every single check-in, we had a different name. I remember it. I can't remember the different names that we had, but I definitely remember going through that.
The only one I remember was like halfway through the project we picked. The team name was Team Chris Chill Out. So that's why I had to ask you that very first question. But no, awesome to be here. Awesome to be hanging out again. And you know, since we are here hanging out at the bar, having some drinks, I have to ask, when you're hanging out, having a beverage with someone, how do you describe what Century Equipment does?
We do so much, so it's kind of hard to put it into one succinct thing, but I would say that we're a process sampling expert. So we do a lot of work in the power generation industry, specifically with power plants. And in that space, we're sampling water. So the power plant really wants to make sure that their water chemistry is what it should be. If you have off water chemistry, then you're more than likely going to tear down the turbine a lot quicker than what you want. So we design equipment to condition that water so that analytical companies can come in and actually do their thing and make sure the water is what it's supposed to be.
And we're going to dive into what you've been doing at Century for the past like decade and a half. Really, at this point, it's crazy how quick time flies. But we're going to get to know your story a little bit first. And I think what is very cool about your career at Century so far is that you were their first manufacturing engineer. And that evolved out of your co-op job when we were in college. So tell us the story. How did that role evolve out of you being an engineering co-op there?
So, yeah, not only was I the first ME, but I was also their first co-op, too. So all these years later, we still have the co-op program going. So I did enough not to ruin it so that we can keep getting in co-op students. But it kind of went from, I remember early on doing the different rotations. So the co-op program at Century set up in a way that you rotate through all the different functional areas for engineering. So you'll start in design engineering, rotate through to applications engineering or sales. And then we had a rotation set up in manufacturing engineering. One of my fears of being an engineer was sitting at a desk and sitting at a cubicle and not doing anything. Mm-hmm. And going through into the manufacturing realm, it's like, oh, I can do engineering work and be exposed on the shop floor and do shop process improvements.
Yeah.
It's like, sign me up for that.
Yeah.
So our VP of manufacturing at the time thought it was a great idea. He was progressive looking. He knew about all the different improvements we needed to make on the shop floor. And they ended up hiring me on.
So what's even more fascinating is not only were you the first manufacturing engineer, the first co-op, but that role has become a team of 65 people now. At least that's what my impression was looking at it from the outside.
So the department, the manufacturing engineering core, is a team of about 4 or 5.
Okay.
But that mindset has really gravitated towards the entire 65. So the umbrella that I fully oversee is all of manufacturing and operations,
yeah,
which incorporates that 4 or 5 people. I wish I had a team of 65.
I mean, that's a lot that it's spread that way, even if it's not all part of the same singular team. You're clearly a trendsetter in that capacity. And I'm curious, why did you and Century decide to scale that manufacturing engineer role that you were in a long time ago?
We saw the benefits. It's like, mm-hmm, one of the things that we try to do is really attach an ROI to any kind of project that we're working on. And scaling the manufacturing engineering department specifically allowed us to not scale in other areas. So you are always hearing the shop space about how there's really a shortage of skilled trade labor and just skilled workers in general. Mm-hmm. By growing the manufacturing engineering department 3 or 4 people, that allowed us to stay relatively flat at our shop.
Okay.
So it's a really easy investment.
So maybe the biggest question, especially for like any of the manufacturing leaders out there that are listening, is how do you effectively scale a role into a team? Like, what are the things that allowed you to do to make this sustainable, to grow at the right pace, and really to continue to show an ROI to say, hey, there are 2 of us right now. We actually need a 3rd.
Yep. We started with the co-ops. So yeah. One of the things that we really drove on as far as trying to get people into the door, especially with engineering, was to really establish the co-op program and have them go through those rotations and then find the ones that are interested in manufacturing engineering and really drive them towards becoming full-time MEs for us. And once we got them in the door, got them trained, it's hard to let them go.
Yeah.
So we spent 2 years of really getting them to understand our system, and we've had them working on projects that are really providing value. Why not keep them?
Yeah. I'm curious because I think this is something folks listening to this can learn. It's like, how do you create meaningful projects, an effective co-op program? Do you literally have like a queue of things where it's like, hey, this is something we need to get done within the next year or two? You know, whenever we get this summer's intern, this summer's co-op, let's assign that to them. I'm just making some guesses here.
Sure.
How do you do that to make it an effective program?
So we have a baseline curriculum. So we assume each co-op, as they're going through their rotations, has to cover a certain level of topics. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what projects we give them, we owe it to the students to be well-rounded engineers come the time they graduate. Hopefully they're well-rounded by the time they retire.
But yes, yes.
Definitely by the time they graduate. And we align projects based on their skill set, but also based on what our needs are. So we do have a list of things that we know we want to get to, and we're going to assign the projects based on that list and based on the skills of the co-op coming through at the time.
So you look at what you need, but I like what you mentioned, how you're looking at their unique skill sets as well. Another thing I'm curious to ask, do you have a story about, you have a plan going to this, but have your co-ops uncovered things that you weren't even thinking of to begin with? Like, hey, this wasn't the project that we had assigned to you, but you've just discovered an area that may be even more critical. And it seems like you're on the right track to finding a solution to increase productivity, quality, whatever it may be. Has something like that ever happened?
Absolutely. We've had it happen a couple of times. And those are the ones that we definitely want to make sure we hold on to. But there was, I don't even know if I call him a co-op. I think he was more of an intern. His name was Adam. And I assigned him a project. It's like, hey, I want you to go into this work cell, really break down the process and just see what you can uncover. I want you to go in there with an open mind and learn what you can learn. He took that, came out with a completely new layout for the department with new equipment that we could potentially add and just a completely different process flow. And I looked at it. It's like, yeah, we need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Well, I love learning about that, the program that has clearly taken your career to new heights. I've seen you in the Milwaukee Business Journal. Like, this is not the first time I've come across Marquise Warren since moving back to Milwaukee. So awesome to hear the things you're doing at Century. I want to get kind of into a topic that comes up on the show quite a bit that it looks like you've done some work with at Century, and that's Manufacturing 4.0, Industry 4.0. There are different terms, different flavors for it, but it is a word that gets thrown around a lot. And I think, at least on this show, we've started to do a good job of uncovering what does it really mean? What do results look like? So what does it mean to bring Manufacturing 4.0 technologies to your operation and create real process improvements with modern technology?
It's a loaded question, and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. To me, it's taking something that is more so a manual process and incorporating technology into it to make it an automated process. It's like you can throw out the buzzwords, the industry 4.0, IoT, whatever you want to call it, but automation is automation at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of incorporating those various tools to automate something that is manual right now. So we do that in our assembly processes. We try to do it whenever we're machining. We try to incorporate it wherever possible, but also making sure that we're not overdoing it.
And if I understand Century right, you're a high mix, low volume type of manufacturing company. So what does this look like in the context of your business?
Sure. So I'll pick on a specific project that we worked on. I think it'll describe it the best. We had a project and we called it Skynet. It was one of the first projects that we incorporated for automation. And we intentionally called it Skynet. We wanted the guys to really look at it like, hey, the machines are about to take over the plant. Even though that wasn't necessarily the case, it was the machines are going to help enhance something that we're working on. But Skynet was designed on the in our machine shop. And in the machine department, what we run into is we have, again, that high mix, low volume, meaning we have a lot of short run production. And a lot of that short run production would be similar parts and mm-hmm. similar parts with maybe a different hole in one location or a different thread type in another location. But overall, the setup and the loading and unloading for the machine was the same. So we took and worked with a local company out of Johnson Creek to incorporate basically a robotic tender into our CNC machine to load and unload a machine.
Okay. All right. So short runs, similar parts, but you were able to standardize loading and unloading to make that happen.
We'll be back in a moment. But first, a quick word from our sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Swipe Guide. Swipe Guide is helping frontline workers perform at their best through standard work instructions and skills development. Their clear-cut platform lets frontline teams coordinate instructions, job aids, and training to optimize processes. All of these aspects add up inside of a manufacturing operation, keeping motivation high and operations running. I mean, Swipe Guide is right in line with one of our biggest themes here on Manufacturing Happy Hour, empowering frontline teams. Their customers are saying the same thing. Here's a quote from a recent review. Swipe Guide has been fantastic for empowering our operators. They now have all the information and knowledge they need to do their jobs at their fingertips. Plus, if you really want to hear how Swipe Guide is making a difference for manufacturers, then head back and listen to episode 167, where Swipe Guide CEO Wilhelmine Schneider and Joris Stolk from Heineken jump on the show to discuss how Swipe Guide's impacted their global brewing operations. If you're a regular listener here, you know that talking about how technologies apply to brewing is certainly one of our favorite topics on the show. And you can get to that episode by going to manufacturinghappyhour.com/167. If you're looking for a hassle-free solution for sharing how-tos and boosting know-how across frontline teams, then look no further and head to swipeguide.com today. And now, back to today's interview.
So let's, Sentry, is it safe to say mid-size, small manufacturer? How would you categorize yourself?
I'd consider us probably small, medium. We're about 200 employees across the entire United States, but probably 130 employees out of the Conwalk area.
Which is why I think it's really interesting that you and I are having the conversation around manufacturing 4.0 in this discussion today, because I think there are a lot of small to mid-sized manufacturers that automatically count themselves out from doing some of these things that make them a cutting-edge technology company. What tips do you have for other small to mid-sized companies that might view evolving as too cost prohibitive or thinking, hey, we're doing fine the way we are, but it might not be what the company needs to future-proof themselves, if you will?
Yeah, I would say the number one piece of advice would be to involve the shop early and often. Mm-hmm. It's like if you're talking about changing someone's job and their responsibilities, there's automatically going to be a certain level of resistance if they're not part of the conversation. So pull them into the conversation even when you're at the conceptual level.
Yeah.
We had a project where we incorporated a laser into the shop, and we did just that. Not only did we pull in the individuals that we thought were going to be directly responsible for the equipment, we pulled in any and everybody that wanted to be an ally. We had a welder that came on the trips with us. We had a shipping person that came on trips with us. We tried to open it up to where anybody was able to really attend. And based on those individuals that attended, they took that message back and shared it with their coworkers. Yeah. So now all of a sudden, we have an entire shop that's really bought into this concept, even though they're not going to be the ones doing the work.
Yeah, I love that. Bringing in folks from a number of different roles, regardless if it, let's say, directly impacts what they're doing. Well, I think this is a nice segue to another line of questioning I have is, how would you describe the culture of your team at Sentry? Let's start with the culture of Sentry to begin with.
Yeah, because my team is going to be a little bit different than that. But we should definitely get into that too.
We'll get into both.
But the culture at Sentry is great. So we're at ESOP. We're 100% ESOP, which means we're an employee-owned company. We've been employee-owned since the 80s, and that's carried through till now. And as an ESOP, we always live by that mentality that every customer commitment, every employee and owner, which is true because everyone owns a small piece of Sentry and we behave that way. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a voice or a say into what it is that we're going to do. They might not necessarily have a vote, but they can voice their opinion and really help drive the company into the direction that we feel is appropriate.
Yeah. I'm curious, how does that sense of ownership across all levels embody itself on a daily basis? Like, can you characterize it in terms of the vibe, in terms of the motivation? How would you describe it? Like, if you're walking through the shop and walking through the hallways?
I would say one of the things that we get out of just having that type of culture is the open door policy. It's like, I can be walking through the shop, our CEO can be walking through the shop, and people are going to stop us and question us. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, we heard that our financials aren't performing quite the way that they should be. Could you explain to us why? Yeah. It's like you're going to get a deeper level of questioning about why something is, not necessarily people that are just going to come to work to collect a paycheck.
Yeah. And you probably get that line of questioning from people at other companies that aren't employee owned, you wouldn't get it from as well. Another question is, what is something that most people don't understand about employee ownership that you wish other people understood, or a common misconception?
I think a lot of people think that they're putting their own money on the line as far as like as a risk. And that's not the case at all. It's like you're literally getting something for free. Your trade into the organization is your time and your commitment, not necessarily your financial contribution to the company.
Got it.
And you might also think that people are paid less being an employee-owned company. And it's like, no, we pay competitively just as if we were privately owned or a publicly traded company.
Well, I want to ask you next, because you smiled and laughed when we brought this up, what's the culture of your team like at Sentry? Let's hear this.
My direct team is, you got to have thick skin.
Okay.
You definitely had to have thick skin if you're going to be on my direct team.
And it sounds like our freshman year engineering project a little bit.
And it's not necessarily driven by me. It's just driven more so by the team. It's like I'm naturally competitive and my team embodies that 10 times over.
Okay. So let's talk about this. You are the vice president of manufacturing. So I think when people think of competitiveness, they think of the sales team and the folks that are out there and, you know, on a commission-based paycheck. So what makes an engineering team competitive?
From our side is, how can we drive out costs? It's
okay.
Like we look at everything as far as cost and margin as an opportunity to improve, but also we'll look at, and I'm going to pick on the sales team a little bit, they will sell something without understanding what material it has to be made on, give us a timeline that's almost unrealistic. My team looks at that as a challenge. It's like, okay,
yeah,
you put us with our backs up against the wall, we're going to do something about it and we're going to prove you wrong.
I've been a salesperson before, so I know what it's like to make those promises, and we appreciate every time that an engineering team can pull through on that. But I think that's great, and just how emphatically you said, how can we drive out cost? Like, and do you think that's a side effect of employee ownership as well? Like, do you think you would be that competitive in a different environment, or do you think that factors into the same way a salesperson's out there like, I want to get this order? You're like, all right, how do we optimize this as best we can?
I think it's partially the employee ownership and the mindset there, but I also think it's just partially just the individuals on the team.
Yeah.
It's like there's certain people that are just wired a certain way, and just I think the employee ownership pulls that out of them more.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool. Well, another question I want to ask, since we started our conversation riffing about our days at Marquette, you know, when you think back to your college education, which ultimately helped you get to the co-op program at Sentry, and then you evolved your career through Sentry as you have done so excellently so far. What sticks with you the most from your Marquette education that's helped you in this space?
I would say freshman year. And again, I'm going to go back all the way to freshman year. Dr. Schimmel's class, the intro class,
which is the one we were talking about, by the way. That was the class. That was a brutal freshman year class, in my opinion.
Yeah, I felt like that was harder than actual senior design, and it's supposed to be the opposite. But Dr. Shimels made a comment to us during one of the lectures, and it was something along the lines of, you're going to view the world differently.
Yeah.
And I never fully understood what that meant until I graduated and got into the workforce. And it's like,
yeah,
as an engineer, you approach every situation as a problem that can be solved.
Yep.
And the other valid part of it is just not so much caring about the solution, but the process to get to the solution.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like, they didn't care what the right answer was. They wanted you to show your work and describe how you got to that answer. And it's like, those couple of lessons really stick to me because it's driven a lot of improvement. It's like, if you're looking for a specific answer, you're going to stop when you hit that answer. If you're driving something based off a process, you're going to continue on for a longer time.
Yeah, I like that, because I remember that lesson. In fact, one of the things you said is one of the things that I took away most. We'll get to that. I didn't remember that exact quote from Dr. Shimels, and I remember a lot from that class because I just remember being like, I want to go hang out at a party, but right now we're like trying to get like this car built or this rover built. It was a challenge watching our communication school friends and people with other majors just kind of putzing through freshman year. Everyone worked hard. I should say that's college. I'm being unfair, but
we just worked a little bit harder.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. We were pulling with, like, if you were a freshman and you were pulling all nighters and you had been keeping up with your classwork, it was because the classes were legitimately hard. But that, I mean, that was a fun memory that night getting that rover done. But I like, as an engineer, you approach everything as a problem that you can solve. I definitely feel that. I also think the thing that resonated the most with me is having that process, because I think I joke around with people where it's like, if I can look at a Thermo 2 problem and break that down and find a way to solve it, I can solve problems as I've done as a salesperson, as I'm doing now as an entrepreneur. It's like, hey, I just got to take a step back and look at it as, what are the steps I can take to get to where I need to be? It also kind of, I think it kind of segued into my career now also, because maybe not freshman year, but by senior year, I had definitely been pegged as the document guy. Like, I was the guy that was responsible. I wasn't writing everything, but I definitely had to compile and make everything flow before we put it in. I'm like, I think something that the program at Marquette did really well for us was it taught us how to communicate as well, which I don't think every engineering program does that out there.
Completely agree. And it's funny that you brought up that you were the guy that was compiling the documentation. It's like, I viewed you as the integrator. It's like, you would take all the different pieces and figure out a way to connect the dots and make the puzzle fit together well.
Yeah, that's still what I do on these podcasts, actually, especially maybe not on one like this, but when I go to a trade show and I'm doing interviews with like six different people and I've got to take the best 5 minutes here and the best 10 minutes there and put it together into one episode, there's definitely an element of storytelling to it. So, you know, as we get to the end of our conversation, I always like to ask, is there something that you wish we would have talked about that we didn't get to today? Kind of a wild card.
So it's funny. It's like, we talked about the team and growing the team. There's a couple of things that I personally try to do as I approach my work. One is, my job is to eliminate my job.
Yeah.
So if I'm doing my job as it stands really well, I'm eliminating what I'm doing today to do something better. So
yeah.
That's kind of the mindset I use. And the other thing, and I'm laughing about it because I tell it to our CFO and a bunch of other people, is billion-dollar company, one person.
Yeah.
How do we continue to really improve our processes to where, not that you can eliminate people, I know I'm saying it to the extreme, but how do you take something and grow it while also scaling down the cost within that structure? So
yeah,
billion-dollar company, one person. That's my goal.
When we talk about eliminating jobs, we're really talking about repurposing jobs in this space. Like, and your team keeps growing, right? You're not eliminating jobs, you're just adding more people as you automate and find new ways to execute on your process.
Exactly. We're scaling sales for faster than we're scaling people.
Yeah.
So we're getting more value-added sales per employee.
One other thing I do need to ask is, you got to tell us where we're hanging out right now, because I drove out to Oconomowoc, where your office is today, and I understand you're a regular here as well.
Yeah, so I haven't been here as much lately. I have two kids, the 4-year-old and the 2-year-old, and they're pretty much eating up all my free time. But
yeah,
when I started off as a co-op student, our vice president of manufacturing at the time and our CTO were regulars at Rosati's, which is where we're sitting.
Yep.
And we used to come every Thursday. Mm-hmm. Every Thursday, without fail, Rick or Jay would walk around the office because they've had a long day, and it'll be 3:30, 4 o'clock, like, hey, who's up to go into Rosati's for a couple of drinks?
Yeah.
And the part that made it even more sweet is they had free pizza. So not only could you come here to drink, they would give you free pizza.
Does free pizza still exist today here?
Or is that... I don't know.
Because we are here on, it is Thursday. It is Thursday as we're recording this. We might need to investigate that when we're all done here. I have one more final question then. What do you have any memories of times where you came here and you solved a problem that had been bugging you guys for like weeks or months or whatever, and just sitting around having pizza and beer helped you get to the finish line?
I can't think of anything specific. I'm sure it's happened.
Yeah.
Just because of the amount of time that we spent here. It's like pretty much thought we were solving all of the world's problems when we were here, but I can't think of anything specific.
Pizza and beer will do that too. You leave feeling a little smarter sometimes. Yeah. So, well, no, this has been great. You know, anyone listening to these can usually tell we're hanging out at a bar. Maybe they heard the car alarm going off today for the past like 3 minutes as well. But this has been a great catch up. We don't need to wait 15 years to hang out again. In fact, I think our 15-year college reunion is coming up in like 2 months. So, it's gone by very quick. But Marquise, what an awesome opportunity to get back together and have you on the show.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it, Chris. And I agree. It's like, it shouldn't take another 15 years. You're back in Milwaukee now. We should definitely make this more
effective. We should get the old gang back together. Jeff and all the other folks we hang out with. Yeah, we'll need to get a reunion done after this show. So, all right, man. Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, thanks for listening. Okay, so I'm going to fill in a couple gaps here at the end of the conversation that I'm sure you were wondering about as we were having our discussion. I did look up all of our team names for our freshman year Mars Rover project. Again, to be clear, this isn't the team name of every other team we were competing with in this project. This is just the name of the teams that, you know, we rotated between every week. So the team names are Team Spinal Tap, nice, Team Dr. Seuss, I don't know where that one came from, Team Rock Solid, that one makes sense. Team Cosmonaut, also on track since this was a Mars rover project. Team Tootsie Pop, I have no idea, probably some sort of inside joke. And then, of course, the last one, Team Chris, don't worry about it. Also, the last task that we couldn't remember in the engineering challenge for the Mars rover was the only one we accomplished with flying colors, actually, and it was the easy one, so of course we forgot it. It was driving the Mars rover up an incline. So anyway, I hope you had fun as we reminisced through some of our college days in that episode. If you want to learn more, go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/177 to visit the show notes page. There you can check out Century Equipment, connect with Marquise, check out Marquette University's co-op program. Of course, I linked up to that there. And also, I do want to say shout out to Marquette, the co-op program. Obviously, it helped Marquise and I early in our careers. You know, you learned about Marquise today. Some of you that listen regularly might know that I actually started my career as a co-op with Anheuser-Busch. So now that I'm running Manufacturing Happy Hour, a beer-driven manufacturing podcast, I'm sure you can see where maybe that experience ties into what I'm doing today. And of course, shout out to all of our professors at Marquette and any of our classmates that might be listening to this episode. We had a lot of fun today. I hope you had a lot of fun listening to this as well. Anyway, as we wrap up, I want to thank our sponsor for this week's episode, Swipe Guide. And I also want to say, if you want to join the Manufacturing Happy Hour industry community, go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/community. It'll take you straight to our page. Request to join. I'll let you right in. Just say you're a listener of this show. Can't wait to connect with you over there. And with that, that's a wrap. Stay innovative, stay thirsty. We'll catch you again next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Manufacturing Happy Hour, powered by the Industrial Network.